The doctrine of Sarah's daughter, Roman numeral 1. As we know, the scriptural basis for this study is found in 1 Peter 3:6. As I have it written out for us, thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children, that is, obviously daughters, as he's dealing with wives, doing what is right without being frightened by any fear. This doctrine focuses on wives in the royal family. The emphasis is directed to believing wives. Peter isn't writing to women in the cosmos, in general, negative volition. No, he's writing to people who are assembling themselves together in local churches in Southeast Asia. They're believers. And his emphasis here in regards to all the commandments and imperatives of this particular section of Peter this evening is upon the orient of the just believer and their obligations before God in orientation to authority in life. Submit. To be submissive in this regard. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands. And therefore, the purpose that any of them are negative, if they have bodily volition resident there anywhere, your application, your witness of the lie will assist it being stimulated and coming to the surface. Number 10. So B, 1 Peter 3:16, also the passage of 1 Timothy 2:9 through 15, and then Genesis 18, as we've seen, 1 through 15, are the principal passages that will be referred to in this doctrine. See, the proper understanding of and eventual acclimation to the principles covered by this doctrine are the keys to a lady's maturity adjustment to the justice of God. They're key to it. If these imperatives are not followed for wives and women in general in regards to orientation in this direction or in parts of their lives, then you can check off, you know, the maturity adjustment in their own lives. Like any other doctrine. But especially in a marital situation. So the maturity adjustment puts them, for those wives who are sufficiently positive in orientation to this doctrine, the maturity adjustment puts them in an elite company of spiritually mature ladies that are called Sarah's children or daughters. Again, that was verses 5 to 6, 1 Peter chapter 3, in recognition of the holy women of former times. Those who were adjusted, those who were righteous, set apart to God, and God found very precious in regards to their persons. In general, and then Sarah as the particular example. E, only when you, wives, acclimate to the principles contained in this doctrine are you Sarah's spiritual equal. And certain believing ladies will have the special honor of being in a circle of very prominent ladies in phase 3. It is a ladies' club. Everybody likes to have their little clubs, you know, in churches and all these other things. Well, here's your club you can join. Get the ladies together and get your own club, and we'll call it Sarah's Daughters. So, and y'all can talk around, sit around and enjoy fellowship with one another and eat and everything, and then talk about how submissive you've been to your husbands last week. It can happen. All right, Roman numeral 2. Again, I'm trying to inject a little humor here, so I only have to duck maybe one hand or two. I'm kidding. 2, Sarah's example now in Genesis 18, 1 through 5, 15, contains the elements, again, that establish requirements for admission to this elite society. So here, let's go ahead and look at that passage again, and we'll read it all the way through. Genesis 18, 1 through 15. Now the Lord, Yahweh, appeared to him, that being Abraham, by the oaths of Mamre, while you're sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. The heat of the day, you know, where I come up to be the hottest part of the day, usually around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, actually. And when he lifted up his eyes, Abraham, and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. It's like they disappeared. How did you come from? And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. As a gesture of hospitality and greetings, etc. And said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. He wants the fellowship. There's obviously something about them that definitely appeals to him in this respect. And he says, please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Of course, as we know, Abraham has more in mind than just a little bit. And get off your feet, give yourself a break, get the shade, and it'll refresh you in this respect. In verse 5, and I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves in regards to any hunger or whatever. After that, you may go on since you have visited your servant. And they said, so do as you have said. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, quickly, prepare 3 measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes. The command, quickly, now, on the double, you know, whatever, however you want to say it, and the exact measurements, as if the wife that was antagonistic, or like I hadn't made this before. I don't know how to make bread. No, but this is the authority. The authority knows what he wants. And it's his prerogative, see, in this respect. And this doesn't bother Sarah, because she's acclimated. 7, verse 7, Abraham also ran to the herd and took a tender and choice calf and gave it to the servant, and he hurried to prepare it. The servant was a good one on the charcoal. The wife's a good one in baking bread. And he took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them. And he was standing by them in the tree as they ate. He served them in regards to like a waiter. And allowed them as he didn't bother them, etc. And then they said to him, where is Sarah your wife? He said, behold, in the tent. And he said, I will surely return to you at this time next year, in regards to Yahweh speaking now. You know, slight conversation, where's your wife? You know, off of it. Obviously, she was part of the meal preparation, all these things. Yahweh said, I will surely return to you at this time next year. Behold, Sarah, your wife, like a child of son. But 1 year, Isaac's going to already be born. And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were all advanced in age, as I have brought out in Genesis 17:17 brings out. 100 years old of Abraham and 90 years old of Sarah. Advanced in age, Sarah was past childbearing, sexually dead. Sexually dead, she could not produce any more children. She was beyond, menopause had already occurred. And Sarah laughed to herself, verse 12, saying, after I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. My Lord, there's the context in regards to Sarah calling Abraham Lord in that context. And the Lord said to Abraham, why does Sarah laugh? Now, she laughed to herself as in her thinking. But obviously, Yahweh being omniscient, knew her thoughts, knew what was going on. And he says, why does Sarah laugh, saying, shall I indeed bear a child when I'm so old? Obviously, the very mark that she's not dealing with it. Just a usual stranger coming by and applying hospitality towards him. And verse 14, is anything too difficult for the Lord? The questions may ask, obviously rhetorical. At the point of time I will return to you, this time this year, and Sarah shall have a son. And obviously, this brings Sarah to the mix, and she's in a position, and she's obviously embarrassed, and that, and this is the way SCA works, you know, get embarrassed, because instead of just admitting, you know, what you did, she continues to try to worm out of it. Verse 15, Sarah denied it, however, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid then. Ooh, I messed up big time. And it's just kind of this kind of attitude I think probably we go through in life, and they do mess up, and then it's like they're not willing to admit they mess up, because then your FCA gets a hold of you and you lose sight of the grace of God truly in your life and how things can continue to go on, and God will He loves the positive believer, and He's going to be for them. You know, I'm just thinking out loud, and your relationship to Sarah. And she was afraid because of this. Fear got her then. And he said, no, Yahweh responded, but you did laugh. Verbally chastised her again, but you know, he didn't make her blind or anything, you know, kill her on the spot. So it is in that passage then we see the primary element of the scenario of which we know Sarah, Peter appeals to in regards to Sarah as an example of being probably the justice wife. So A, you have the setting as we see here, one, the Lord and two angels visited Abraham on a hot summer day. That was verses 1 and 2. Again, we know that the two visitors with the Lord were angels. That is brought out in chapter 19, verses 1. Verse 1 there, if you continue on in regards to the remainder of chapter 18, the Lord continues to talk to Abraham. He reveals to him what they're getting ready, what he's getting ready to do to Sodom in that regard. And Abraham goes through and he appeals with doctrines. There's been probably volition there, etc. We can spare it, etc. And God shows his grace. But as we know, as little as he finally got down to a number in that regards, even 10 out of the whole place, you know, like some place like Cleveland, some other people, he find 10 positive people, he's fair to Cleveland. As we know the story in regards to that, not even 10 positive people. The only believers that were there were Lot and his family. And they were, if you will, sorry, Lot of believers. Pun intended. Lot was reversionist. He was a monetary reversionist. He was the nephew of Abraham. God told Abraham at the beginning in regards to his ministry and God's geographical will for him to leave Ur and leave his family behind and take off with his own wife and head out where he is telling. And Abraham wasn't willing to separate totally from his immediate relatives, and Lot was one of them. And Lot followed along. And finally, because Abraham wouldn't apply separation, Lot was a believer, but he was negative. God put him in a situation where strife existed between them. And finally, kind of like the story, I see. Abraham had enough and says, you know, make the choice and I'll leave. And, of course, Lot looks towards Sodom as a more rich, affluent area of the world, and he's a monetary reversionist. And that's where he heads out. He says, I'll go that direction. And Abraham says, all right, fine, I'm heading this direction. And finally, they separate. And Lot's there for the money. He's in it for the money. See? Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. It's an Old Testament story for you, but that's right. You can check it out on your own. It's true. And one of the aspects regards to the known scripture, an aspect of Lot, the homosexuality problem that Sodom and Gomorrah had, that vibrated the hell out of Lot. It really vibrated his senses. And the New Testament scriptures makes that clear. And that was a righteous principle that he clung to even in the midst of his reversionism. But yet money was more important to him. See. And we know that homosexual sexuality was the primary trend regardless of city. Obviously, it was a hell-raising party city anyway. Fornication, regular, normal perversion, that was rampant too. But homosexuality was dominant because of the two angels. Here in this story, you can read it for yourself. Go in, and the males of the city, they dog them, you know, like the perverted, abnormal beings and dogs they are, to have sex with them. These people out there that think because I teach the truth of the Bible doctrine, I'm narrow-minded in regards to homosexuals. Well, so is God. I don't care. And, you know, they basically pounded on the door, you know, to try to get to him. And God intervenes, you know, and I don't want to make sure I don't get my stories confused because there's another story. The Benjamites had to go through this. God made some of them blind, but it's still just like that is just the abnormal behavior of homosexual trends. The insatiable animals. If you do any kind of research, you'll find that the wealthy of the world are known for their pedophilia. They love young children, but they get away with it because of the power of money. But all right, we're not getting there. But we'll stick with the story. This is divine viewpoint in the face of the human viewpoint that is out there in this world of evil that we live in. And Lot and his two daughters and wife. The only believers in the whole city. But God, obviously, is going to spare them. And they take off, and he gave them one order, says, you leave, and don't look back. And this is like your opportunity, all right? You're going to get out of this reversionist situation, and immense historical judgment I'm going to bring upon this area. But you can't look back. That's the principle of doctrine. Don't look back. God gives you grace and make reversion recovery, the opportunity to do so, etc. But you can't look back. You start looking back, your FCA starts salivating again in those areas, and there you go. Well, they were all successful at that point in time, except for his wife. And as we know, she looked back, and God turned her into a pillar of salt. Got there immediately on the spot. So Lot, his two daughters take off. You know how Lot ended his life? He ended his life, at one point in time, towards the end of his life, him and his two daughters, they got him drunk, and they had incestual relationships with him. Because, you know, he's hiding out and living and doing this thing. Oh, what a way that God turns people's lives around. Making all this money at one point in time, living with all the queers, you know, and he ends his life in this situation. Wow. Bible stories are cool. They don't pull in punches. They tell you how it is. See, in this respect. So, anyway, I told you that whole story to bring us down to the point that those two individuals with Yahweh were two angels. And they're the ones that went to Sodom. And those queers tried to attack them. it's better than some science fiction books, I'm telling you. You like to read the Bible. Try reading the Bible. See. Read it with discernment. All right. So, to Abraham, desiring their doctrinal fellowship, asked him to stay a while, verse 3, as we saw. 3, Abraham proceeded to show them hospitality, verses 3 and 5. The importance of hospitality, Romans 12, 13. Regards to that which is desired among believers in the application of divine love without hypocrisy, verse 9, and part of the imperatives given in this regard, the royal imperatives, verse 13, contribute to the needs of the saints practicing hospitality. And then Hebrews 13:2. Let the love of brothers continue, verse 1, verse 2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Now, obviously, I'll finish the verse here. For by this I may entertain angels without knowing it. To be nice. and even if necessary, open your door as Abraham did in regards to strangers that are out there in the middle of nowhere. On a scale, you use some sense. An angel that isn't going to show up looking like a wino and smell like pee all over his pants and be drunk. like angel appears to you, they'll be clean cut. Don't worry about that. And they probably had a persona about them that these people. And if you ask me, if you get any conversation with them, you're not going to hear any human viewpoint from them. So that's something to keep them in your house for. But sometimes you never know who you may run into in life. See, that's the thing. And are you prepared? His offer being accepted, Abraham immediately went to the herd, the cattle herd, and handpicked the best baby beef that would be billed, and ordered the ship to prepare quickly, which he did, verse 7. 5, before this, he commanded Sarah to prepare her famous bread recipe. And she opened up with Sarah's daughter's cookbook and found it, but oh, this is so sweet. Hey, we got one of those cookbooks to float around. All right, we'll break it off here. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit, lighten us to these things. Jesus.